We fought long to authorize a program for responsible energy development in Alaska's non-wilderness 1002 area.
The congressional deal to open ANWR to oil drilling makes it into the final tax agreement. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, December 13th. Good evening, I'm Zachariah Hughes. Also tonight, a Washington man is sentenced for scamming millions of dollars from Alaskans.
They were actually praying for him, as you heard in court yesterday, all the while he was praying on them.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you.
Republicans in Congress say they have reached a final agreement on their tax bill, and it appears to include a prize the Alaska delegation has sought for years, opening the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling. But Democrats say they don't know what's in the final agreement because they haven't been allowed to see it. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
Are you ready to stop this Republican tax scam?
Yeah. Let's do it!
Outside the Capitol, Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren fired up a crowd of protesters. But inside, a conference committee was meeting over the tax bill. The purpose of a conference is to iron out the differences between the House and Senate versions. But Republicans had already announced they'd reached an agreement among themselves. And Democratic objections were futile.
Mr. Chairman, I would respectfully move that the conference committee stand adjourned. With its work unfinished,
Democratic Representative Lloyd Doggett tried any number of ways to throw off the proceedings. The Republican chairman, Kevin Brady, gave no quarter.
Second the motion.
Thank you. That motion is not available. We will reserve.
Mr. Chairman, appeal the ruling of the chair.
So that motion is also not available.
All right.
So let me go back over the committee rules.
Well, what are the committee rules other than we do whatever you want?
It was all for show anyway. As Chairman Brady explained, one of the few requirements for a conference committee is to hold one public meeting. This was that meeting. He made it clear Republicans don't have to give the Democrats on the panel copies of the agreement. Brady said they'd see the bill before final passage in the House and Senate, slated for next week. But the committee meeting was a chance for speeches. Senator Lisa Murkowski, when it was her turn, praised the bill's inclusion of drilling in a portion of the Arctic Refuge. It's a goal she has held her entire congressional career, as has every Alaskan elected to federal office.
We fought long to authorize a program for responsible energy development in Alaska's non-wilderness 1002 area, which Congress specifically set aside for its evaluation of its oil and gas potential.
Most Democrats used their speech time to call the bill a giveaway to the rich that would vastly increase the deficit. The nonpartisan Joint Committee on Taxation put the price tag of the Senate version at $1 trillion. But Republicans, like Alaska Congressman Don Young, say the corporate tax cuts will create more jobs and fuel the economy.
Thank God I'm wearing my cowboy boots today. You know why cowboys wear cowboys' boots? To keep their damn pants clean from the horse manure that comes from people that don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Young looked pointedly across the room at a Democratic senator who had just spoken. Young told her if the Republicans are wrong about the bill, if the tax cuts don't help the middle class as promised, then Democrats get bragging rights.
If we're wrong, you ought to be happier than the devil. You ought to be real happy. You can say, look what the Republicans did. Look what they did. They hurt you. They hurt your economy.
But Young says he's convinced the Democrats are wrong and the bill will create more jobs and more freedom. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The Alaska Division of Elections has denied the Alaska Republican Party's request to block three incumbent House Republicans from running in the party's 2018 primaries. The party wrote a letter to the division on December 4th, asking that Representatives Paul Seaton of Homer, Gabrielle Ledoux of Anchorage, and Kodiak's Louise Stutes be blocked from the primary ballot as a repercussion for violating a party rule against caucusing with other political parties when there's a Republican majority. All three representatives joined a bipartisan coalition in 2016, which took control of the House away from the Republican majority. State Elections Director Josie Banky says the division responded to the party's request on December 7th.
Well, we decided not to take any action at this time for a couple of reasons.
Banky explained that the party missed the September 1st deadline to make rule changes to its primary process and that its request also clashes with state law.
The request clashes with the law allowing any registered Republican to run in the Republican primary. And lastly, you know, none of the three candidates targeted by the proposed rule change has yet filed for re-election in 2018. So really, any action by the division would be premature at this time.
State Republican Party leaders voted to make the rule change earlier this month, arguing that an October court ruling in a case between the Alaska Democratic Party and the state allowed them to add the primary block as a repercussion for violating the existing party rule. Alaska Republican Party Chairman Tuckerman Babcock disagrees with the division's decision.
But of course, the judge's decision, recognizing the right to do it, wasn't until October, so I don't think that would hold up. The second thing was that it's premature because none of the three Republicans who joined the Democrats have filed for re-election yet. That has nothing to do with enforcing our rule or not.
Babcock says the party may join Democrats in their lawsuit. The Democratic Party wants to allow independents to run in its primaries. The state appealed the case to the Alaska Supreme Court, and it'll be taken back up in March. Babcock also noted the party might consider filing its own case in federal court. The case of a Puyallup, Washington man who scammed close to $3 million out of more than a dozen people, mainly from Dillingham, came to a close Tuesday. 56-year-old Floyd J. Mann will spend the next 10 years in federal prison. KDLG's Dave Benninger has more.
U.S. District Court Judge Timothy Burgess handed down the sentence and ordered that Mann remand to custody immediately following Tuesday's hearing in Anchorage. The 10-year sentence was above the guideline range for the 19 money laundering and wire fraud charges Mann pleaded to. But Burgess said his priority was to make sure that the, quote, dogged, determined charlatan does not have a chance to scam people again anytime soon. Sentencing above the guidelines is rare, but Assistant U.S. Attorney Ani Stewart, who prosecuted the case, also thought it was the right thing to do.
It was an appropriate sentence in this case. The judge recognized that this was of financial crimes in small towns in Alaska. This was in a category of its own for the level of deception and the length of time that Mr. Mann's scheme lasted.
The government had only asked for 8 years in jail. Judge Burgess found that the impact to the victims was so severe that the stiffer sentence was warranted in this case. J. Mann began his scam in Puyallup around 2011, preying first on his neighbors who were from Dillingham. When they ran out of money to pay their own bills, they asked money for help from their hometown, and money began flowing in from Dillingham to Mann through early 2016. Investigators have traced $2.7 million that was transferred, but suspect there may have been more. Mann maintained that a doctor had overprescribed him an antibiotic that had given him cancer, and his victims believe they were paying his medical and legal costs to settle a massive lawsuit against a pharmaceutical company out of Texas. In reality, he was pulling slots every night and funding an expensive addiction to oxycodone.
Mann was incredibly sophisticated in his coming up with new stories and changing the rules of how his lawsuit was being handled. And anytime victims had questions or started pursuing, you know, checking on it, he would change the rules and come up with a whole new game plan to keep his scheme concealed. And I actually have never seen anything that lasted with this duration, with this much success, with having this devastating impact in a community.
Judge Burgess said the same thing from the bench. Mann's defense attorney argued that the motivation behind the whole scheme was drugs, that J. Mann had a long-term addiction to opiates. She said he was taking up to 9 oxycodone pills a day for years, a habit that cost him a lot of money and corrupted his mental faculties. His other addiction, she argued, was the gambling. Victims testified in court this week about the impacts this has had. Several lost homes, businesses, life savings, and more. Stewart says it was heartbreaking to unravel this case, realizing that man knew for years how he was tormenting these good and honest folks. His first victim actually had cancer.
And he watched that man first lose his house, then lose his life, and then Mr. Mann moved on to that man's friends and family in Dillingham. It's hard to think of anything more ruthless or depraved than that kind of conduct. And meanwhile, this group was a very generous, very faithful group. They were actually praying for him, as you heard in court yesterday, all the while he was praying on them.
The victims described how what had started as an effort to help a supposedly sick neighbor had snowballed into a larger and larger investment, done with the best of intentions, but that they were constantly in fear of losing what they had paid in thus far. By 2015, federal investigators were closing in, and by spring of 2016, they had raided the man's home in Puyallup.
It was the teamwork of three federal agencies working together that led to the convictions both in Washington of Mr. Mann's wife for Social Security fraud, as well as Mr. Mann himself. And those three agencies were the IRS criminal investigations, FBI, and Social Security criminal investigations.
Cheryl Mann was sentenced to 3 years of probation. Jay Mann will spend a decade at the federal penitentiary in Sheridan, Oregon, a sentence he began Tuesday. When he gets out, he's been ordered by the court to start repaying $2,682,000 in restitution to his victims. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Sitka residents push for an anti-discrimination clause to protect LGBT citizens.
Puts the values that a lot of Sitka already have on the books and protects people, makes people not feel at risk at discrimination.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by
ExxonMobil Alaska, whose goal is safe and responsible operations of the Point Thompson facility. ExxonMobil, energy lives here.
If you love what you hear on your public radio station, consider becoming a member.
The Iditarod Trail Committee is taking steps to tighten security along the race route in the near future. Iditarod spokesman Chaz St. George says the board and staff are considering adding security cameras at the Nome Dog Lot, as well as the White Mountain and Unalakleet checkpoints.
Based on last year's experience, these two checkpoints are extremely active. There's a lot of folks that come in and out of Unalakleet, especially during this race.
St. George says other strategies are in the works as well.
We're looking at a number of different protocols that we can deploy in the future. This year, for instance, you will see more visibly individuals who are boots on the ground that will be monitoring our dog lots.
The discussion comes after the ITC's announcement in October that multiple dogs on four-time champion Dallas Seavey's team tested positive for the prohibited painkiller Tramadol at the end of the 2017 race. It was the first time a positive drug test had been returned in Iditarod history. The ITC changed the race drug use policy following the positive test, shifting the burden of proof to the musher if there is a positive result. Seavey has denied that he gave his dogs Tramadol and alleged that foul play was involved, calling for better race security. In the wake of the announcement, the Iditarod Official Finishers Club issued a statement calling for several changes to Iditarod race rules. Among those was a more comprehensive drug policy, including withholding of prize money in the event of a positive test. St. George says the board also discussed such a policy at its regular meeting on December 1st.
The board of directors is looking at working on the mechanics of that protocol, how that will look. When the need arises and when the opportunity arises to move on action items, I'm sure this board will come together and make that happen.
No action items related to the drug use policy were brought forward at the December 1st meeting, but Wade Mars, who is president of the IOFC and sits on the Iditarod board as the musher representative, says Rule 53 is in the process of being rewritten. That's the so-called gag rule that's been criticized by mushers and the IOFC.
The gag rule was intended to make sure that we didn't bash sponsors or bash one another or bash the race publicly, which is totally understandable. But our main worry as mushers was we had to be able to call the board or the staff out on issues. And so they're rewriting it for the proper wordage on making sure those things are known.
Mars says he's happy with the progress that's been made on the issues raised recently. The 2018 Iditarod begins on March 3rd. 69 mushers are currently signed up. Earlier this fall, the Human Rights Campaign gave Sitka and 10 other American cities a score of 0 on its Municipal Equality Index because these communities had no legal protections for residents based on sexual orientation or gender identity. In Sitka, that is about to change. The Sitka Assembly last night passed a sweeping anti-discrimination ordinance. But will it really change anything in Sitka? KCAW's Catherine Rose recently spoke with some residents who think it will.
Cheryl Barnes and Madison Cosma are a couple with a pretty great How We Met story. Both researchers working on advanced degrees, they crossed paths at school in Fairbanks last year.
I just couldn't let it go. I just kept having feelings for her and embarrassing things like staying at the lab later because I knew her car was in the parking lot and like just leaving my office door open, hoping she walked by and said hi to me. But
which I never did.
Never
Bummer.
Did.
Long before she met Barnes, Cosma first moved to Sitka from Hawaii in 2012. There, she felt comfortable being open about her sexual orientation, but a move to a new state caused some trepidation.
I did have some moments of wondering how I should approach the topic. It's a red state. But then when I first landed in Sitka, I didn't have any fear that there was anything that was going to happen or safety reasons for not being open about who I am, who I love, you know, how I identify myself.
Barnes moved here this year. She's on the board for Southeast Alaska LGBTQ Alliance, or SIGLA, and to get to know the community, she threw an event at a local business for National Coming Out Day.
A month or so ago, and tried to get people to come out. We were somewhat successful.
Come out to celebrate, not
yeah.
Oh, come out.
Come out to be together and to celebrate. Yes.
Sitka felt welcoming to both Cosma and Barnes when they arrived. But the city code didn't fall in line with the values of the Sitkins they knew. Currently, there's nothing on the books that offers hiring or housing protections based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Barnes says that's a problem.
It does come into play when you do as an individual experience discrimination. You need to be able to have some sort of legal leg to stand on so that you can fight not being hired for a job or being rented a house because of your sexual orientation or gender identity or gender expression.
Earlier this fall, Sitka fell into the national spotlight when the Human Rights Campaign issued their annual report that scores cities based on LGBTQ protections in city codes. Sitka received a score of 0. Barnes says the absence of these protections could discourage people from moving to or even visiting Sitka.
And that is the sort of thing that LGBTQ folks look into before they go somewhere to live or even on vacation. They want to go to a place that is going to be supportive or at the very least, you know, non-discriminatory against them.
In fact, the Alaska State Commission of Human Rights received 58 inquiries about discrimination in Sitka in the last 5 years, though not all were LGBTQ related. Director Marty Buscalia says that number is pretty typical when compared to other small cities in Alaska.
Several physical and mental disability cases from Sitka. We have several age cases from Sitka. We have a few religion cases. And from what I can see, there was one national origin.
20 of those inquiries became formal complaints. To protect privacy, Biscalia can't share any specific details about the human rights complaints in Sitka, and she can't say how many of those complaints were from members of the LGBTQ community because, as of now, they can't pursue complaints based on sexual orientation or gender identity.
We did attempt to pass a resolution this year, and it unfortunately did not go through. We do have a resolution in front of the legislature right now urging them to pass a law that protects the LGBTQ community in Alaska. But, you know, they've had a lot of other issues that they've been dealing with, and that one doesn't seem to have gotten anywhere at this point.
Cosma says it's easy to think that because Sitka is so small, everyone feels the same way.
You realize that you can get into your groups and your bubbles, and that maybe the voices for equality is really loud in your group, but doesn't mean that's everywhere, and you got to figure out where those voices are.
And Barnes says, in the end, if the ordinance passes, everyone will end up ahead.
Puts the values that a lot of Sitka already have on the books and protects people, makes people not feel at risk at discrimination. And that actually makes a better situation for all of us, even those who aren't directly impacted. How can we all feel properly protected and free, I guess, in our society when others aren't?
The ordinance also protects for discrimination based on age and disability, race and class, and religion and nationality. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
GCI, with complete technology solutions for organizations that keep Alaska's communities and economy thriving. GCI is your partner in possibilities. Do you need health insurance but think you can't afford it? Alaska's health insurance premiums are going down for 2018. If you need insurance or currently have insurance through the individual market, be sure to shop at healthcare.gov between November 1st and December 15th to confirm that you have the plan that best meets your family's budget and coverage needs. For local assistance, call 1-844-PLANS-AK. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
Bristol Bay residents will soon have a new airline option. Raven Alaska announced yesterday that it'll begin operating flights between Dillingham, King Salmon, and Anchorage this spring. Currently, Penn Air offers the primary and often only service between Anchorage and these communities. Starting on Valentine's Day 2018, Raven will offer two round-trip flights on weekdays from Anchorage to Dillingham and King Salmon, and one round-trip on each Saturday and Sunday. Dave Flieger, Raven's president and CEO, says that it's a move the company's been considering for a while.
It's an obvious hole in our network. We're the largest regional carrier in Alaska, but where we don't go right now is down in southwest Alaska. And so Dillingham and King Salmon are obvious places, big communities, important communities, and we wanted to start flying there because, A, the community seems to want more competition and want more competitive fares and want more reliable service, and two, we want to be more relevant to the residents of this great state.
Beginning yesterday afternoon, customers are now able to book tickets online. Raven will be operating the Bombardier-8 aircrafts, configured for 29 passengers. Chilkoot tribal members would like to see more Native art made by Native people for sale and on display in Haines, and they'd like to see less Native-style art made by people who aren't tribal members. That's the message from a forum at the Haines Library last week. KHNS's Barrett Wilbur reports.
All five speakers at the Our Art is Our Voice forum acknowledged they were starting a tough conversation. Their goal? Less, quote, Native art made by non-Native people sold and displayed in town. Master carver Wayne Price put it this way.
Counterfeit art prominently displayed in Haines does not and cannot reflect our culture. The volume of artificial Native art seen by visitors falsely represents our Native traditions. We are making a stand today to defend our heritage from an invasion of counterfeit replacement.
Representatives from the Chilkoot clan talked about how and why they'd like to see Native art approached differently in Haines before opening the floor for community discussion. Tribal member Ted Hart read a letter from Tlingit scholar Hune Lance Twitchell, who lives in Juneau. Because Tlingit designs convey meaning about Tlingit history and culture, Twitchell argues it's inappropriate for non-Indigenous artists to be drafting those messages.
Non-Indigenous peoples are encouraged to learn our languages, to understand how we live our lives, to share a culture with us, and to learn about our art to the point that they are involved in the creation of monumental art like totem poles, wall screens, houses, and canoes. They should not, however, be the lead artists on such projects.
Questions about Native art and authenticity aren't new in Haines. Art is big business here. A 2015 study surveyed 60 local artists. It estimated the town's arts economy generates over $2 million in spending each year. More than 18 form-line style public art pieces are displayed in town, made by Native carvers, non-Native carvers, and teams of both. Harriet Brulette, tribal administrator for the Chilkoot Indian Association, reminded the audience of the Indian Arts and Crafts Act of 1990. That law makes it illegal to explicitly market art as Native or Tlingit if it wasn't made by a tribal member. But the law only penalizes people who lie about a piece's origins. It's not illegal to use Northwest Coast-style designs without attribution. That's frustrating for tribal members, who respect Tlingit traditions in which clans own their designs. But audience questions showed there was gray area for both Native and non-Native participants about how Native art should be defined. One carpenter asked about making Tlingit rattles.
I'm just making them for private individuals. I state that I am not Native in any way, shape, or form. What would your opinion be?
Speaker Ray Dennis, who describes himself as the last member of the Chilkat Valley's Luxidi clan, said only claiming the rattles were made by a Native artist would bother him. Brulette had a different opinion.
These are clan-owned designs. They do not belong to you.
When asked about non-Natives taught by Tlingit carvers or Native artists cross-training in the style of other tribes, forum leaders didn't rule one way or the other. Brulette says those questions still need answers.
And that's happening now. You know, it's kind of like a head-scratcher to me. How do you address that?
Why is the authenticity of Indigenous art coming up now? Brulette points to a cultural shift in the way Native art is perceived.
There is a renaissance happening with our younger artists, and that's helping our master artists to gain a stronger voice. Our master artists, a couple of decades ago, wouldn't have had an apprentice because it wasn't cool or okay to be Native.
Though speakers mentioned drafting a policy or writing guidelines in the future, they didn't pitch any concrete method to stop non-Native artists from working commercially in Haines. They said this was just the beginning of a long conversation with the community. In Haines, I'm Barrett Wilbur.
That is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we are online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media, and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Aaron Bolton in Homer, Dave Benninger and Avery Lill in Dillingham, Gabe Colombo in Nome, Catherine Rose in Sitka, and Barrett Wilbur in Haines. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Zachariah Hughes. Have a great night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, now distributing Boss Industrial Log Splitters, stocking gas and electric up to 34 ton, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
And by
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com. Thinking about completing your college degree? Good news, you can finish it right here at the University of Alaska. Go after your dream by earning a bachelor's, master's, a certificate, or an associate degree at the University of Alaska. Flexible classes, convenient schedules, affordable choices, and outstanding faculty, the university has it all. It's your choice, your dream. See how the University of Alaska can help you achieve it at alaska.edu/start here. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska. Open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska is now through Friday, December 15th. Enrollment assistance is available and it's free. Visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust.
From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.